This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
Right now, get up to 20% off select online storage solutions. Put heavy-duty HDX totes to good use, protecting what's important to you. The solid, impact-resistant design prevents cracking. And the clear base and sides make items easy to find, even when the totes are stacked. Find select online shelving and tote storage up to 20% off at the Home Depot to organize every room in your home, from your garage to your attic. Visit HomeDepot.com. How doers get more done.
Welcome to the Antler Up Podcast, brought to you by Tethered, the world's best saddle hunting gear, and we got a great show for you all today. You're listening to the Antler Up Podcast, where we dive into archery, hunting, and the mindset needed to elevate your game. Join us as we explore the latest strategies and gear to help you become the best hunter you can be, both in and out of the woods. And turkey season is here, and if you're serious about running and gunning for gobblers, you need a vest that's as mobile and adaptable as you are. That's where the Tethered M2 Turkey Vest comes in. Designed with the input from the hunting public and built for high-speed, low-drag performance, the M2 is ultra-light, whisper-quiet, and completely modular. Whether you like to keep it minimalist or pack in every tool of the trade, the M2's MOLLE-compatible system lets you set up your gear exactly how you want it. It's made from Whisper Tough fabric, a blend that's soft and silent on the outside but tough as nails on the inside, all wrapped in the legendary Mossy Oak Bottomland camo. And best of all, the M2 is proudly made here in the USA, built for durability, designed for the ultimate mobility, and ready for the toughest turkey woods. So head on over and grab yours today over at tethered.com. At Antler Up, we know that quality gear can make or break your hunt, and that's why we're excited to partner with Huntworth Gear. If you're looking for premium gear without the premium price tag, Huntworth has you covered. And new for 2024, the Vertec pattern is a dynamic woodland camo pattern blending perfectly into any environment, whether you're stalking in the early season or hunkering down in the late season. From lightweight options for those warm September days to insulated gear that will keep you warm during the harshest winter conditions, Huntworth has you covered for everything you need all year long. Gear up right now and head over to huntworthgear.com to check out their full lineup.
Jim, what kind of call did you use today?
A mouth call. Except it was weird. You blew in one end and nothing came out the other. What kind of call was that? What was that thing we were blowing on?
What are you talking about?
It's a wiener.
Oh my God.
Turkey hunting's cool. If you're gay.
I mean, you were wearing a leafy suit.
Yeah. These guys set me up. Give me a fucking leafy suit.
We couldn't even see you.
Shotgun wasn't even loaded.
Shotgun wasn't even loaded.
Tim made one call all day. Now I'm starting to think. I'm rethinking this whole thing. We weren't even turkey hunting. This was just to see how far we could push Jim to look like an idiot.
There wasn't even any turkeys where you
were. Yeah. So.
A fake. You had a decoy out there saying there was a real one.
Yeah.
Oh my God. That was good.
Dude, look at the three bows over there. This is like Goldilocks and the three bows. Huh?
This one feels just right.
Look at that. Big, medium, small. Do you see that, Tim? Look, turn around, look at the bows. It's perfect. The way they're hung there like that.
Oh my God, I'm crying.
Golly.
What did you eat for breakfast? Mushrooms?
I don't know. Freaking. The giant bow. It's like a Viking fucking launching logs. I mean, that guy freaking. Why do you carry that thing for bow hunting? You could shoot in a rhinoceros with that fucking.
Oh, man. Well.
That's one way to kick off.
Oh, you're recording? I thought we were just bushing. Wait for Tim to start telling a story.
Oh, my God. Okay. Serious now?
Yeah. All right. Go ahead. All right.
No, so welcome back to the Antler Up podcast. We're going to dive into Tim's grand slam here to recap day one. It'll be really simple. We didn't hear anything.
So one hen.
Jim was all dressed up professionally in his leafy suit, so that was good.
Yeah, he looked good.
And then Josh and I, we trekked up to the top of the mountain, and we didn't hear a bird. We didn't strike up anything, so.
Seemed like a pretty slow day all around them.
Yeah, it seems that way, even from messaging some buddies and everything like that. So it was kind of seemed quiet. So we'll have to get after it here again soon later this week. But so we mentioned in last week's episode of Tim doing the whole season grand slam, and we wanted to dive in a little bit deeper with that. And so when we talked at Jim's for that podcast, did you already go to Florida?
Yeah, that one was done. I was leaving for Washington, Oregon that like
the next day. Yeah. So you already had that one in the bag. Mm-hmm. Where do you want to go, or how do you want to start it?
Well, we could start when I left, right?
Okay, let's do that.
I think it's good to just talk logistics too.
Yeah, I would definitely want you to cover that.
Mm-hmm. Logistically speaking.
Mm-hmm. Well, just, you know, traveling to hunt could be a pain. And obviously this was flying because I was flying into Portland.
Right.
So, and my goal was, I was flying out on a late evening flight. So I worked Monday and then I was leaving Monday after work and getting into Portland basically Tuesday at midnight, like early Tuesday morning, essentially. And that was the first opening day for Oregon and Washington. They opened the same day. So my goal for my hunt was I had 6 days to hunt, hopefully Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, hunt Oregon, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, hunt Washington, and then come back. My ultimate goal was shoot something in Oregon as soon as I could. That would be the Rio. And then head to Washington and try and get the Mariners in Washington. So, flew out. Like I said, I worked all day, jumped on the flight, got in a little bit of a cheat code. If you, so I got to the car rental, counter, and I always book like the smallest, like most compact, cheapest vehicle. And then when I get there, they always try to upcharge you. And then pretty much got the guy for like an extra dollar a day up to a midsize SUV. So I ended up with a Subaru Outback. Oh, nice. And it was the first time I ever drove a Subaru, but it was actually like the perfect turkey hunting mobile because it was comfortable to sleep in. So as soon as I got in to Portland, like I said, it was like midnight out there. So it would have been 3 a.m. here. So I was like running on nothing. And I had like a 4-hour drive south.
Okay.
Probably like between 3 and 4 hours to get to the trailhead where I was planning to hunt. Now, most of my research prior to going out there was 90% was spent on Oregon, 10% was spent on Washington, because I knew if I didn't do anything in Oregon, there was no sense in going to Washington.
Right.
And I really wanted to see Washington. So as soon as I got in, started heading down, I stopped at a gas station and pretty much set the vehicle up, like got the bed set up, got all my hunting gear together that I was able to just pull in a trailhead and just, because I knew by the time I got there, it was probably going to be within like hour to an hour and a half of first light.
Right.
For opening day. And I knew at this point I wasn't going to sleep either. So got the car set up, flew down to the area I was going to hunt. And it was just outside of a small town, but pretty big BLM piece. A lot of rolling hills, a lot of different diversity. Thought it'd be a good spot for birds. And I pull into my spot. And I'm like, this is great. You know, nobody was there or whatever, but it was also super early. And I'm like, I'm just going to sleep for like 20 minutes, then get up, change, head in. And I like no sooner put the seat back and headlights come in and like this car like turned and like shined its lights onto like the Subaru. And I'm like, what the hell is this? You know? So then they back up, they go up the road like 100 yards and they park. So now I'm like, oh God, you know, like another hunter's here already. And this guy like walks in the woods with a headlamp, and it's like an hour and a half before first light. So I'm like, well, I guess I got to go in, because my plan was to go in much further. Well, I didn't know where he was going, and he could have been going in pretty far too since he was going in so early. So as I'm getting my stuff together to go in, I'm skip the nap. I grab all my stuff. And I'm like, all right, well, I'm going to walk in. So then as I start walking in, he was walking back out. So I'm guessing maybe he set up a blind somewhere close. I don't know. But I was like, whatever. I'm just going to go all the way to the back side of this property because that's where the turkeys are going to be. And I made it like halfway through. There was all this thick crap that I had to crawl through. And I got to this one open area where it was a pretty good vantage point to hear. And there was a rock there. So I was like, I'm just going to catch some Z's and wait for something to go off. Because at this point I was up for, I don't know, like 21 hours.
True.
So I just slept on this rock, and it was starting to get light, and one goes off. And I'm like, all right, here we go. And I like hop right up. And it was probably like...
riff, but that's awesome.
I was like, because at this point, I just wanted to find birds. It's the first morning there. I'm tired as heck. So they're probably about 400 or 500 yards away. So and again, this is like Midwest, a lot of rolling hills. So it took me a while to get over there. So by the time I figured out where they were roosting, they were just about out of the tree, somewhere out of the tree. It was a group of gobblers and hens. And they were right on private and public land. And they actually, by the time I caught up to them, they were already on private. Mm-hmm. So it was the only group of, and I did hear other birds that sound like they were more on the public side. But I was kind of just wanting to see what these ones would do, because they were actually roosted on public. And nothing really went on. As the morning went on, I did see three toms broke away, and they were within 100 yards of me, and they're coming. Now all of a sudden, deer just, they must have been to my left, and they just cut across.
Okay.
And they went right between me and the toms, and they just ran up this mountain. And I didn't see the toms after that. They kind of like dipped out.
Oh.
So at this point, it was like late morning. I was dead. You know, I'm still no sleep. And at this point, I didn't stop I guess since COVID, like, there's not too many places you can get, like, groceries, so I wanted to, like, stock up for the trip. So I was like, all right, let me hike back out of here. I'm going to go to Walmart, get supplies for the next few days at least.
Right.
And then probably take a nap and then come back in. So that was my goal. I went out. I did that. I got a bunch of food, everything prepared for like 3 days. And I pulled back into the area and I was just going to take a rest like in the car. I was like, well, I may as well just go back in there. Like, if I'm going to fall asleep, I may as well be in the woods.
Right.
Because I knew I was going to be in there until knowing that they were going to roost back on public, I figured, let me just get in there early and I'll just sleep where I'm going to hunt them from.
Right.
And so I do that. I hike all the way back in and I get nice and comfy. And I kind of called on my way in there, you know, and saw a couple Jakes working my way through. And I went up and I set up in this nice little backside of this little ridge that they were feeding across the whole morning. And I figured I'm kind of in a good spot for let the evening play out. And I doze off and I'm not even focused on the hunt at this point. And I don't know how long I was out for, but you're not really sleeping too hard.
Right.
Sleeping too hard.
I'm listening.
Freaking.
So this hen picks me out. I can just hear something walking. And then, yeah, you start hearing this putting. And I'm like, oh, crap. Like, there's a bird, like, right on top of me right now. And she had to be pretty close to me, but I just couldn't move. Like, I'm, like, flat on my back, you know. So I just let her go, and she kind of walked off to, like, 15, 20 yards, and she's still putting. And I'm trying to, like, calm her down, and I start clucking a little bit, and she's just kind of, and she did, she calmed down, she stopped putting, and then bam, this bird hammers.
Oh my.
And the bird's like 200 yards out, and I'm like, all right, I'm up now, you know. And this is 4 o'clock in the afternoon, so he still had like 3.5 hours until they'd even be coming back to roost. And bird hammers again. Now there's two of them. And they were actually doing what I thought they were going to do, but the way I was sitting, I had to, like, spin myself around. So I got spun around on the tree, and I'm basically on my knees, and I'm watching this little bench, and they would have came up above me. And I start calling again and just hammering every time. And then here they come, two of them come up over the hill, and I picked one out, shot, bird fell. And, you know, I go up, grab it, I'm like, I got the rear, yeah, right?
Yep.
So grab some photos and stuff, headed out, and I'm like, may as well start making the trek to Washington. So I was hunting a southwest portion of Oregon.
Okay.
It's pretty much the majority of where the true Rios are.
Mm-hmm.
So it was going to be about 6 or 7 hours to where I wanted to hunt in Washington. So I was like, let me crank out as much as I could. So got the bird. I went back into town, and my whole plan for this, like, I think this is something that, you know, just because of budget, like, I'm by myself. I don't need to be bougie. Like, I'm not staying in hotels or anything like that. Like, I'm just pretty much roughing it. But now I got to prep the bird, right? So now I got to, you know, take all the meat, any trophy preservation, deal with that, blah, blah, blah. So my plan, if I carried this through, that I was going to do some type of mount.
Okay.
And so what I did was basically prep the tail fans. And to do that, needed all the stuff. So I had to go back to town and get the couple things that you need and piece of cardboard, lay the fan out, pin everything down. I usually brought like the pins and the painter's tape and everything else with me. So I get all that done up on the flat piece of cardboard, get it all salted and all that, and lay that in the back of the vehicle and start driving to Washington. And at this point, I was leaving town in Oregon, like right at dark. So I made it till like, I want to say like 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock.
Right.
And camped. Just usually at a rest area, you know, Walmarts do overnight parking, So like anything like that, I just kind of pull in and just
close your eyes. Yeah.
So at some point I realized I was up like 33 hours or something ridiculous.
That's insane.
So I already said to myself, so this was Tuesday. This was opening day. I'm done in Oregon. So I said, screw Wednesday. I'll use Wednesday as a commute travel day to get up to Washington. And then I'll plan to hunt Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So both these states offered 3-day non-resident licenses, which is nice because it's cheaper on the wallet.
Mm-hmm.
I was hoping that's all I needed was a single 3-day license.
Right.
So wake up Wednesday morning, continue my drive, end up getting up into one of the bigger towns in Washington. And at this point, best thing has been, I had another goal of from January 1st to the end of April, I wanted 100 sessions in the gym. And I was teetering right in the 90s at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew if I didn't go at all throughout the rest of the trip, I'd have to like pretty much finish out all of April. It would have been close. So I was like, it's an off day. I'm going to go to the gym, use the gym as a shower. So like having a Planet Fitness membership benefit from that, you just go around, use the showers, yeah, at least if you wanted.
Yeah.
So I cranked that out during the day, continued my commute. And then I got up into the area I wanted to at least start scouting and hunting in Washington for the Merriams. And at this point, so this would have been like Wednesday evening, I had like maybe an hour and a half left of daylight. So I figured, let me just locate birds. And drove around some of the public land, started to realize that not a lot of it was accessible. Because mm-hmm. a lot of the public land was up really high. You obviously needed access from the roads, and a lot of that access was blocked by private properties.
Okay.
So that's when I sent you guys the herd of elk, of like 300 elk that were in the field. Yeah. It was filthy with deer too. Like I probably saw on that evening, I'd say 30 to 40 turkeys, 300 to 400 deer, and like 300 elk. Just driving.
You always see the species you're not going for. Seems like.
So I also, just reading online and stuff, like, you know, knowing you could do some door knocking up there, probably get some permission. The area that I kind of focused on, which ended up not being the area I ended up hunting, but where I was finding birds at the time, this is great background noise. So I ended up trying to, you know, just do some door knocking that night to see if I could get something for the next day. And, nothing really came to fruition. It was very early in the year out there, and I think a lot of people that use that area as like second homes and stuff, there wasn't many people around. So one guy gave me permission because I saw him coming off a property where the birds were, but he was just farming it. He didn't own it. But he's like, oh, but I own this. And he like showed me where it was and everything. And I'm like, eh, probably not worth my time. So
just because of like habitat and all that stuff?
Yeah, it was just basically a wide open field. There's no hardwoods to it or anything. And like, you're too close to the property line if you wanted to really hunt it to begin with. And I try and remove myself from those situations. So I kind of had a plan to go into a public area in the morning. So I set myself up for bed Wednesday night. And I go to buy my license online. And I know a couple states that have been like this, but I haven't came across this lately. Oregon has like an online app and everything.
Okay.
And, you know, I have my laptop open. I'm trying to go through Washington's website and stuff and go to buy the license. It's like, can't add to cart. And here it was one of these, I think I ran into this with Nevada once trying to, and now I actually ran into it with Connecticut, that they need to certify your hunter's ed.
Yep.
Before you can actually purchase anything. Like, some sites you can just type in your number, your state that you got it in,
right,
and then just continue. No, this had to be like verified. Like you had to upload an image of it, which was fine. Like I carried it in my wallet,
mm-hmm.
but like you had to upload an image for it, but then the office has to approve it in order for you to be.
And that could take.
Yeah. So now I'm like, like just, you know, this point it would have been Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm looking at like a Thursday, Friday, Saturday hunt, and now I'm going to lose Thursday morning, you know? So I was a little bit stressed about it.
You can't use a license from another state?
No, like you couldn't actually do anything until you submitted this verification. The problem was I was trying to do it at like 10 o'clock at night and the offices was closed, so it wasn't going to get approved in the morning. So my thought was, okay, I'll just spend Thursday morning. I'll continue scouting around, see where there's birds at.
Right.
Between public, private, and if it is private, maybe I can do some door knocking. But I knew I wasn't hunting the AM. So I got up first light and I went to a different area on the other side of the main route that goes through there. And there's just birds in every private field. Like you found like little pockets of them, but if you found a pocket, they were on like every property.
Mm.
But then you may go up a mile up the road and you won't see birds for another 5 miles.
Gotcha.
So they were kind of sitting in these pockets. So I kind of started pinning where I was seeing them so I can come back and door knock later. And really just trying to get bearings on the whole area in general. And I saw two birds on public and it was like 7:15. I was like, what the hell? Give it a shot. And I ran up to the Walmart in the nearest town. And usually in most cases, there's nobody around at the sporting goods.
Yeah.
And I met the nicest guy at this counter at 7:15. He's like, yeah, I'll hook you up. Yeah, come on. And got my license before 8 o'clock. And went back to an area where I ended up hunting later, but could not get permission. Like that person wasn't home. Like I said,
gotcha.
Like, and at that point I was like, I'm not a big private guy to begin with. So I'm like sick of doing the door knocking. So like, I'm just going to go back to where I saw those two birds earlier in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And, they end up still being there. You can actually see them. You had to glass them from far ways away, but you could see them at the bottom of this private or public property. The problem is you couldn't access it where they were. You had it was like an L-shaped property and they're at one end of the L and you had to access it from the other end of the L. And this is where I was saying it was 1,100 feet in elevation up and then 1,100 feet in elevation back down to get down to where these birds were. And I'm thinking to myself, well, it's going to be my whole morning. It's already, you know, 8 o'clock. I'm just going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I got ready, got dressed and everything, pulled off the side of the road and started hiking up the mountain. And I took my time getting in there. I didn't really call going in. I didn't really think too much of, I wasn't, all the scouting that I did the whole time I was in there, I wasn't really finding birds like just right in the middle of state forest either, you know? So, these guys were basically on the edge of the state forest and it was an open area, came down the mountain and then it opened all up and you could see them out in the opening. So as I'm coming back down the other side of the L, I got to this clearing that I can actually see a vantage point to where these birds were. And I sat there for probably like a half hour and then finally, boom, there they are.
Mm.
Just two strutters with, two hens. And I knew where they were. I knew I can get down on them. So I start going down this steep side and I hit a creek, followed the creek all the way down. And I probably got to within 100 yards of where I thought they were going to be. And I start creeping up the road. I already had them pinned kind of like where they were.
Right.
So I start creeping up like this old logging road and, right in front of me, like 20 yards, a hen comes booming across the log, and I'm like, oh, crap. So I sit down right by this log, and I'm thinking the toms might be with her, and I waited probably another 15 minutes and nothing. And she didn't putt, didn't do anything. She just kind of headed up in the woods there, and I figured, let me call. And I call once, nothing, and call again, bam. Two birds just hammered, like,
and they're right on top of you,
50 yards from me. Yeah. So I sit down and here they come, man. Just, it was, there's this pond that they were pretty much down by. And I saw on the hunt in Oregon that a lot of the birds were overheated and they were kind of like fanning out where they were cooling themselves down. And, they start coming in. They were obviously down there because it was a lot cooler, you know. So there's a berm that the pond was on, and that berm was like 15 yards from me, and they came right across the berm. And I just came in looking, so I squared up on one and shot the more dominant bird, and now I had my Merriam's. So
that only took you what, like?
So that was I got the tag at about 7:30 ish, and that I shot that bird at right before 11. The ink was still wet on the tag. So I tagged that bird, and it took me a long time to get out of there because that was like 3 miles, and like it was a lot. I actually figured out at the end of this entire Grand Slam, I toted a turkey around for 7.5 miles.
And we were talking earlier, how many days total did it take you to kill the entire Grand Slam?
Hunting days, it was 8. Total days between Florida and Connecticut was 47. So I had the Merriam's, and I'm hiking out of there, and that was like a picturesque setting. Like that was so cool. Beautiful. So I got that bird out of there, and again, prepped the bird, take the meat, put the meat in the cooler bag, get more ice. And at this point, so this is Thursday. By the time I got back to the car, it was Thursday early afternoon. And the way you could do it in Washington is you could buy 3 tags, and you could buy them all separately.
So they're all separate.
Yeah. So like you have, and they're all different prices. So like your first turkey tag, I think, is the cheapest, and then it goes up in price. If you want the second tag, it goes up. If you want the third tag, it goes up.
It's not the other way where it could be like
the opposite.
Opposite. Yeah.
So I figured, this is Thursday early evening. Let me go back to the one property that I already talked to the individual that lived there, but they didn't own the place. They gave me the owner's address. So I was like, if I can get permission, I know there's birds there. I was like, if I can get permission there, I'll go up and I'll go up and get a second tag. So I run up, I ask the guy for permission. One of the nicest guys. He's like, yeah, absolutely. Have a good time. So I went up, bought a second tag, got dinner, went to bed, and that's where things got a little
dicey,
a little weird. And I'm so glad that they got weird after I shot the public land Merriam, because, I think it's good to, if we go through it too, because maybe somebody else could be more aware than I was in the moment. So I got the So after I asked the guy for permission, he talked about a veteran group that was also going to be in the area, but this guy owned several parcels across the valley, and he really didn't know where he was going
to hunt.
So I was just like, well, I'll just get in early and go from there. So birds were probably talking about 5:20, 5:30 in the morning. So I was set up by about 4:45, and I'm underneath the trees on the edge of one of the properties where I saw all these birds basically just strutting the whole time.
Right.
So I kind of figured high probability of shooting another bird and probably having a real good, in like a different style of hunt. And I think that's what I loved about the Grand Slam in general is
everything was different.
Every bird I took and every hunt was just completely different across the spectrum. So some you had to be more aggressive, some you had to be more patient, some were, super quick, and some took a little bit longer. So, and like the different times that I took each of these birds is kind of crazy too. So I get in there and it's just starting to crack light, and here comes a truck up the farmer's driveway. And flicking the headlight, because I figured it's like this, somebody coming in here to hunt or whatever.
Yeah, so who's coming at 4 or 7? Yeah,
so courtesy has always been like, I'm here.
Yep.
And this guy just proceeded to not give a crap and just come right down to me. And we're having a conversation, and he's having a conversation at a normal level. I'm having a conversation at a whispering level because there's like birds that are waking up right behind me at this point. And, you know, it was the whole story of, oh, didn't know you were going to be here. And I'm like, didn't know you were going to be here. I was like, what could we do? And he's like, well, you were here first. You could just hunt, you know, do whatever. And I guess they were kind of sponsoring this hunt and had people in or whatever it was. So, and I think I was having the approach of like, hey, there's enough birds here. Like, we can both make this work. Let's plan it out. And they were on the side of like, no, just hunt, do your thing, and gotcha. We'll get out of here. And then it got weird because, you know, I didn't hear them leave. And at this point, a little bit later, it starts getting light and 60 birds. I'm not kidding. Like, you guys seen the photos. Yep. Like, 60 birds pitch out of these trees. You know, 15 strutters, you know, if not more, are now all going off on the field. And typically what they were doing was eventually they break up into little groups and all the groups go in their own direction.
Right.
So I knew it was just a matter of time before I'd have an opportunity at a bird, you know, at my sub 30 yards. So all these birds are kind of doing their thing as they do, like when the Merriams are flocked up, and then all of a sudden a gunshot goes off. And I jumped because like gunshot went off within 100 yards of me. Like, I wasn't expecting it. And
right across from you.
Yeah, like at first I didn't even know where it came from. And then I see a bird down in the middle of the field and all the birds are now spreading out. And I'm like, these guys snuck in. It like didn't tell me that they were going to hunt it and shot a bird from like 50 yards away, you know. So
right out from under you.
Yeah, like it would have been nice to just be like, hey, yeah, we do want to go over there. And like, okay, I know where you are. You know where I am. And I didn't really need to kill another bird either. Like, I wasn't. If he would have said, hey, can I bring the veteran down here? I would have been like, yeah, let's do it right. Together, you know, whatever. So anyway, this bird goes down. The birds are all going around. So the most courteous thing that they did was they stayed put, mm-hmm. You know, because the hunt, my hunt still was playing out. And I was able to calm down three toms, and the three toms are starting to head off the property. Ended up taking a long shot at one, and he didn't go down instantly, but he went down, kind of came towards me and expired. So then I was really jacked. I was like, this guy got a bird. I got a bird. I wasn't as pissed off that I wasn't,
yeah,
that I was lied to, or, you know, just not made aware that you, for safety reasons only. Like, if those birds would have pitched out a different way or something would have came by me, I could have shot in their direction. I didn't know they were there, you know?
Exactly.
So that's why I was a little bit more upset, but it happened more after the hunt because in the moment, everything played out, everybody was safe, and there was two birds on the ground. And because of the amount of birds there, I had the tripod set up, and I don't film much, but I just had the film rolling. And I go over, I grab my tom, who ended up like a couple yards from me. And I just start the tagging process. You know, I'm looking at the bird, start the tagging process, and not really knowing what's going on, I figured I'd meet up with those guys. And by the time I got that done, they were like behind me and they were coming up and they were like, oh, you know, nice bird you got, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, yeah, I'm like, you guys made an incredible shot. I was like, those birds are pretty far. And there's a little bit disturbing too, because like the birds were working right into them. Like, there was no reason to shoot that early. So then they didn't have the bird with them. And I'm like, you know, where's your bird? And they're like, oh, we got to come back and get it. And my ignorance, just thinking that everybody means well in this world, I was just thinking like,
right,
you know, maybe they, you know, being with this veterans group, maybe they do like a whole ordeal, you know, whatever. So they go back up to their truck and I hear them pull out. And I'm like, all right, well, I didn't think anything of it. So I grab my bird, I take the photos or whatever, and go back to my car and get ready to leave. And I start driving back to town because at this point I knew I was like done. Like, I shot my two Merriams, one on public, one on private.
Now you could have a little vacation.
Yeah. I got a couple days here. This is Friday. Friday early morning. So I go back into town and I get changed in one of the gas station parking lots, and I, you know, take the meat out of the bird again, prep all the stuff. And I go back and I'm like, oh, like, you should watch that film, you know? And the film wasn't zoomed in at all, but you could see the whole field and how everything played out. And after I left the frame to go get my Tom, they like walked out to the field, and you could see I'm going to use air quotes, but the guide like walked up to the bird, it turned around and walked back. And then the hunter walked up to the bird, turned around, walked back. And then they walked back together, I guess, to where they were hunting. And then the hunter turned back around, came and picked up the bird, and then walked back to where they were posted at. And then they like left the frame. And it was just weird to me, because when I rewound it back, like, the bird that went down in the field never strutted, never gobbled. So I think it was a mistake kill. I don't know why they shot that early or whatever happened. But it was just, I don't know. The more I thought about it, maybe I should have taken it to the next level, but I didn't want to accuse either. So it's just, I think if you were a group that's like putting this on, like, you got to be ethical and you got to do the right thing, and mistakes happen. And if you did shoot a hen,
right,
go through the proper protocol to call it in.
And you've been on those hunts now with the being a mentor and all that type of stuff. And that's something that I know, like you talked about when we were at gyms, you know, like running through that individual through the protocols in a sense like that. Like, but then you have mistakes happen. No one's perfect. Just go through the things. Like, what could have been the worst thing that could have happened is maybe they had to pay a fine.
Yeah, maybe a fine. You lose the bird, but again, you probably could get another tag.
Right.
You know.
Right.
Especially if you did just say, hey, it was a mistake kill.
Right.
I get it. There was a ton of birds in that field. I think they shot way too early. Like, the morning was just starting to play out. You know. There's 15 plus toms in here.
Right.
But you could tell, like, you guys saw the video, like, you could tell the reaction.
Oh my gosh, 100%.
When they walked up to the bird, that neither one was happy about the situation. And I don't even know what they did with the bird. Like, I sure hope they came back and utilized it, but.
Well, because like I was saying to you, in that one Tom, like, flies in and is, like, coming, like, he was strutting and then he's not. And he's right in line with the turkey that ends up being killed, and it's way past it,
right?
And I'm like, my only thought process was that they were going for that one and it just totally missed.
Yeah, right. That could be.
Yeah,
which is why also, you know, it ended up looking like it was like a 50-yard shot,
right? Because that sucker was way past.
It was a shot, because I even said that to him, like, that's a heck of a shot, and they were like, oh, not really, you know, like, not jacked up that they just shot Marion, you know, like, and I was, you know, tickled pink, because I thought both of us, like, it all played out, and I was, it removed the whole disgust I had from the whole situation of the fact that you should have just told me that you were gonna go in there. I would have had more respect for you at that point if you were like, hey, do you mind if we go over there as well? I would have been like, yeah, flash your headlamp or something when you get over there so I know where you're at.
Right.
You know.
He just, didn't say anything.
It just basically lied, said, you have at it. Because when they didn't leave, I was like, well, maybe they're just going to assume I'm going to be done super early and then they're just going to hop in here.
Right.
Which, again, would have been cool with that too. You know, I would have been cool just giving up my spot if they were like, hey, this is all the work we put into it. But don't sit there and tell me, like, yeah, it's all yours. You were here first, and then zip around in the dark.
And then shoot.
And shoot.
Right across from you. Oh, man.
That's how people get hurt.
So after you got that done and you prepped, you know, the fan and you changed and everything like that, you went to Spokane.
Yeah, I went down to Spokane, hit the gym, hit a shower, and we planned to just stay around there. I actually started to come back across Washington. This would have been Friday night.
Okay.
Spokane Valley Archery. Yeah, I did. I stopped and saw Spokane Valley Archery for you guys. So.
Yeah.
There's a cool shop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot
packed.
Of bows.
It was packed.
Like with
people. Yeah. Like, it was midday on a Friday and there was probably a dozen people there shopping, shooting, you know?
Because that 3D range is right there on it.
Yeah, there wasn't many people shooting outside.
Okay.
But yeah, just inside at their little range that they have in there. And
yeah.
That facility is just packed with equipment, though. Like, you can't fit anything else into it.
Because the thing that's cool about his shop is they ship from that. Like, you could go on there if you're like, man, no one around me has this, you know, whatever, mod.
Yeah.
And he might, you could buy it and he ships it.
Okay.
So, like, that's the nice thing about that show. That's why there is so much equipment.
Everything over $99 is free shipping, so.
Okay. Yeah, I actually called Jim, and I'm like, yo, I'm here.
No.
I'm like,
put my mic back up. Give me my voice back.
You were snoring over there.
Bullshit. You've been snoring over there like Darth Vader.
Not me.
So, I actually called Jim, and I was like, dude, I'm going to get Jeremy a shirt from here. And then they all had like X's and two X's, and they were like stuffed in the corner. They weren't very big on their own branding.
Yeah.
So then I traveled back, and then what I wanted to do was ship the fans home. So okay. All the fans were pinned, prepped, curing, and now it was, I got to get them home.
Right.
So I ended up shipping them via FedEx. Secret tip was you get an art box for like a piece of artwork.
Okay.
And it has like this internal box to an external box, and you just stuff everything in there. So what I did was put the cardboard down, put the fan out, pinned everything, basically painter tape the feathers the way that you want it, and then bubble wrap over top of it, and just stack the three of them on there.
Dynamite.
Shove them in the box and ship them home. It was a little more expensive than I thought it would be, but it also was going clear across the country.
Right.
Because I did the same thing from Florida. I shipped a fan home from there, and it was like a quarter of the cost. So,
how much does it cost to ship?
This was like $40, I think.
That's not
all day. That's great.
Again, it didn't weigh much. You're probably paying more for the size of the box because the fans are like, they're like 18 by 26. Now, I did learn a couple tips going through that over the years, too. Like, sometimes it's cheaper to, like, when I was down in Florida, I just, like, bought my brother this product just to use the box. Because it's cheaper if you use a box. You know, it depends how you want to pay. Is it weight or is it size? So, you have to kind of decide how to do it. But it's really not bad. And everything came in perfectly fine. And
perfect.
So, then Saturday, I went to Seattle, and then I was flying out Monday. So, Sunday, I hit, Sunday was Easter, so I hit church, and then I hit, what's the mountain out there? Mount Rainier, yeah. So, I went up to Mount Rainier. They were still under, like, 8 feet of snow at the top. It was crazy. Gosh. It was crazy. And then flew out Monday from Portland, so I spent some time in Portland then, too. So got home, so now have the Aussie, the Merriam's, the Rio. And we talked before, I was really hoping to do everything out of state, not just out of state, but a new state that I've never been to. So looking at my work schedule, I wasn't planning to take off time, but I was planning to utilize the couple hours that I had before work. And the state of Connecticut opened on the 30th, which was a day earlier than, and I've hunted New York, so I didn't really want to be New York, but it was a day earlier, I think, and before Vermont and New Hampshire too. I think they were all on the 1st.
Okay.
And these are all states that you can just pretty much get over the counter tags. So I was like, all right, well, Connecticut, I can get an extra day. And their fees were phenomenal. Like a 3-day license and 5 turkey tags, which was overkill to begin with, but it was like $60, so you couldn't beat it.
Can't beat that. That's my money.
So I had little to no time to research or anything like this, and my plan was just to start at the furthest point east and work my way back. So Tuesday after work, I ran out of work, drove across to eastern Kentucky, got up into some state forest areas that's known for having a decent amount of birds, but it's huge. So your square mile per harvest isn't great, but, you know, they take quite a few birds out of those state forests. And I get in there. I got there just at dark. I was like, let me get up in the woods. Maybe I'll hear something roost, go to a roost, because this would be the night before the opening day. And I didn't hear anything. So end up sleeping in the truck and woke up opening morning. So this would have been April 30th. Yeah, Wednesday. So my plan was to hunt Wednesday, Thursday, Friday before I had to just work. And I changed everything around so I could work remote. And I get up. I go back up to the area where I was roosting. My plan was just to have the e-bike because it's all state forest roads. So I could really put miles on. So get up in the morning. Don't hear a peep out of anything, you know. And perfect weather. So I jump on the bike and I did 7.5 miles on the bike through all the forest roads and doing some calling. I even walked the bike through a tight little path through the woods just to see if there was sign and stuff, and nothing. It was void of turkey anywhere.
Really?
Everywhere.
After you get 5 tags.
Yeah, it was actually pretty crazy. Bad. So even just driving around, I knew at that point, like, you know, if the birds aren't there, you can't make them be there. So it's time to leave. So my goal was just, all right, go up north and then work across back to the west. And then this way I'm basically working myself back home too. So I work for the day. And then at the end of the day, so I was basically like hunting until like 8:30. It all depends on like when I had meetings starting and obligations that I had to fulfill was kind of like when my morning started. And then I just worked my day out.
Right.
So then started driving and relocated Wednesday night back to more of the, like central part of this, I guess it was more of the western part of the state, but like west central. And, I jumped into the woods again. You can hunt them all day. I was just jumping in to see if I could find sign at night. I wasn't really actively hunting them. So still, like, I found a little bit of sign and stuff, but not much. And like the habitat on the eastern side of Kentucky is perfect turkey habitat. Some of these old forests, but it's got none of this underbrush, like very clean woods, like just like if you can get some sunlight in areas, like it really was really good habitat. And then as I moved west, you're getting into like the mountain laurel and the dog hopple and like all this stuff that like
We
don't even want to crawl through, right. So neither do they. So it was harder to find good habitat on the public on the western side of the state than it was on the east. So, again, didn't locate a bird Wednesday night. So I'm staying in the truck, and I'm like, all right, where am I going to go and listen Thursday morning? And wake up Thursday, I go up to this area that was, it was some private and public was mixed a little bit. But a lot of the private around there were fields, farms, you know, I'm like, should hear something. So I stayed at my truck as it got light, and I actually had public on both sides of the road. So I figured if I hear one down the mountain, I can jump over there. If I hear one up on the mountain, I can go up. And two gobblers sound off, and I pull up the map, and boom, like right in the square center of private. So I was like, all right, well, they're probably, you know, that property did back up to public. So I was like, maybe that's all I can hear. I may as well take the hike, you know?
Right.
So I go up and I'm climbing through the mountain laurel and everything else. And the mountain laurel was all up high. If you stayed down low, it was a lot cleaner. So I got up to this vantage point. And I could see the birds from public. I could see them on the private. And I was like, well, I'll give it a shot and try and pull them off, you know? So I start calling, and a tom and a hen started coming through the private. I'm like, oh, hey, you know, they're somewhat interested. And then all of a sudden, the hen, I think, was like, yeah, we're not going over there. Like,
right.
And then I look, and I could see 2 jakes, and they're just on a beeline, right at me. And I'm like, yeah, all right. So, and through this whole, this isn't, like, quick. Like, this is probably, like, an hour of me standing there, like, observing, a little bit of calling, a little bit of enticement. And as the 2 jakes are coming, I'm like watching the jakes, and then boom, one gobbles behind me like 100 to 150 yards. Mm. And there's a pole line that ran through, and the pole line was public. And then everything around the opposite side of the pole line was private. And it sounded like the bird was on private. And then the next time he gobbled, boom, he was right on the pole line. Now, in this case, I'm like kind of tucked up into a corner. I don't really have much areas to roam because I can't leave the public, you know?
Right.
So my setup was subpar. I felt pinched. I felt a little desperate because at this point, like, this is the only bird like encounter I've had like in the past day and a half here with not much sign or even vocalizations to
go off of.
So I'm scrambling to try and get set up because I know this bird's coming. And since he's out on the pole line, I made the first mistake of me being a lefty. It's a lot easier for me to swing right. So I ended up setting up almost square with the pole line, thinking that this bird was going to come just stay on the pole line, and it was going to be probably 30 to 40 yard shot, but that bird, I would have assumed, would have stayed out in the open. And there was a creek that ran down below me, and that bird came right up the creek bottom.
No way.
And it was one of the biggest turkeys I think I've ever encountered in terms of, like, it was a big bird. And he's at like my 10 o'clock, like my 9:30, 10 o'clock. And I'm pointed the barrel towards the pole line, and he's at 25 yards, and he just comes out of the thick stuff. And you just see the sun shining off this beautiful bird. And I basically two options. I can just turn and try and pop shot the turkey or see how it plays out.
Mm-hmm.
And really, I don't know. I think in my younger years, I would have pop shot at that turkey, you know? But in this case, I was like, maybe he'll give me a little bit more time. And even if his route is the pole line, to get back out of there, I might still have a chance if he tried to get up to where the other birds were to begin with. So I tried making the movement a little bit, you know, slowly instead of doing the whole pop shot thing. And he, once he daylighted like out in that open, he was like, I don't see where this is coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't stick around very long, which was unfortunate. And this is where like my mindset was like
crushed.
Yeah. Like I knew I kind of educated him. I knew that was like, I was very close to just being like, all right, time to go home, you know?
Yeah.
So this was at like 7:15 in the morning too. So I didn't want to educate him anymore in case I decided to go back in there kind of thing, but I kind of knew that was, it was screwed up. So I ended up taking a slow, depressing hike back to the truck. And this was Thursday. Yeah. So I spent the day working, and that evening I was like, you know what, let me go back into a different area. It was along the same pole line. It was a different, same state forest, but it was a different property, essentially. It was probably, as the crow flies, maybe a quarter mile from where this encounter happened. And I get in there, and the state must have just cut like a path through there not too long ago, within the last year, because it was nice and it wasn't located on the maps. And I get all the way back in there Thursday night and finally found at the edge of the property some scratching. Nice. Like 7-8 piles, and it was the freshest scratch I've seen because everything was void of turkey sign.
Okay.
And even all the miles that I drove around Connecticut, I didn't see a single bird from the truck.
And you say, and you drove country land, like you
were everything. Yeah, yeah. I stayed off the interstate because like you never know where you're gonna see them.
Right.
So I was like, this is the freshest scratch I've seen. I actually stayed there. So I finished up work about 5:30. I was in there by 6. I stayed there till about 7:15, like probably a good hour until they were going to roost, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you know what? Let's just, I'm going to back out. Just in case there are birds in here, I don't want to be in here. I have to sneak out of here. So I walk back out. I go back, camp for the night, wake up the next morning, and it poured. It like it woke me up like 3 a.m. It was just torrential downpour on the truck. I'm like, holy crap. Because that was the other thing. Like, I almost talked myself out of going home Thursday night.
Right. And like, when, even though we say it's Connecticut, it's whatever, it's still only like a 4-hour drive. Like, that's extremely doable.
Yeah. I think I was like 3 hours and 15 minutes from
home. Yeah.
Like, it was, but the whole morning, the weather was supposed to kind of be crap. This was the other reason, because we were supposed to have this big storm come through on Friday and whatever. It was still calling for drizzle, rain, fog. Like, I knew it was not going to be ideal conditions. So I wake up in the morning, the rain stopped, everything's wet, you know, it's soaked. And I walk in there, which was kind of nice because it was quiet.
Right.
But I get in there and God was like, yeah, we're going to throw a gobbler right where you need him kind of thing. It was unbelievable. I got about 100 yards from where I was planning to sit to listen, and a bird gobbled like 50 yards up in front of me.
It's wild.
And there was actually, so he gobbled once and I'm like, okay, he's close. And first I was like, holy crap, there's a bird in here. So I sneak up the road a little bit more and he gobbled again. And I'm like, holy crap, he's like right here. And I can actually see him, just cause of the way like the light was starting to come on for the day and, where he was roosted. Like there wasn't a lot of, foliage on the trees yet up okay. there. And I can actually see him on the limb. So I'm at like a T in the road. So I was, and it was nice cause there was a little knoll out in front of me. I'm like, okay, so he's got to come up if he wants to see where I'm going to be calling from. Mm-hmm. I felt much better about this setup and I didn't have to move anywhere. So I basically just picked the tree right off the side of the road that I was on, but I can perpendicularly see the road that went down towards him. And, it got, you know, basically got light about fly down area and then the fog started rolling in and they don't like that either.
Right.
So he's gobbling up on the limb and I'm tree open just a little bit and he'd answer it. And then I'd shut up for a while and then a hawk flew down and the hawk flew right into the tree right between us, like halfway between both of us. And it's the most vocal hawk I've ever heard. Like 30 times this hawk went off within like 3 minutes.
Okay.
And he shut up the whole time. He gobbled at it like the first two times the hawk went off and right. then just shut up. So finally the hawk leaves like probably 15 minutes later and he's quiet. And then boom, he hammers again up on the roof still. And it's like, I don't know, 6:20 at this point. Like it's an hour into first light already. And I thought I was close enough where I'd see him fly down. And then 5 minutes later, boom, he's on the ground, gobbled. And I'm like, all right, game on. So I start calling. He answers. We're going back and forth. And he didn't actually move at all. So
when, do you think he was out there strutting?
I think, yeah, wherever he flew down to, I think he was kind of just chilling, probably trying to just get the vibe of the day here because with the fog and everything, you know. Yeah. The other thing was, is where he was roosted was kind of weird because there was fields behind him. Like there was private behind him and there was fields out there. And I figured if this bird is soaked, like he might pitch right to those fields, but he was far enough away where he probably would have pitched in the woods.
Right.
But then, and I was uphill, but I was like, there's a good chance he's going to go down and go the other way out to those fields. So he kind of hung up a little bit. He was gobbling from the same position a few times and I'm like, all right, I'm going to give you all I got. And I started purring at him and that was it. Like then the gobble got closer and closer. And you know how they like shut up and you're like, the head's going to pop around here any second now.
Yep.
So like a minute or two goes by and then up over the knoll, here comes the head. So, and that's all he gave me, like neck up, just peeking over to see where the sound's coming from. And I was like, it's now or never. And I end up shooting.
He was tasty.
And, I didn't know what happened at first. You know, I felt like it was a good shot, but like, because of the knoll, I couldn't see. So I go running down and, you know, I grab the bird. And I must have been running pretty hard because at this point I'm pretty elated too. Like it all came together to have two opportunities in 3 days in a place where I didn't see many birds I was pretty blessed.
Heck yeah.
So I go and I grab the bird and I was going to bring him back up to where I was sitting, you know, and I'm like, holy crap, there's a pair of binoculars right on the path. So I go over, I pick them up. I'm like, wow, these are cool. And then I realize they flew out of my harness. So, yeah, at that point, I brought him up to where I was, and I tagged him. It was a beautiful bird, a little over an inch spurs, 10-inch beard,
yeah,
and just a tank of a bird.
That was a paintbrush.
Yeah, it was a fantastic, like, yep. Connecticut turkey. And then, again, I had, like, a probably mile and a quarter to get back out. And picked up a shed halfway through, so that was cool.
Yep.
You know, took some pictures, but that moment, like, when I got back to the truck and, like, all this came together, it was very rewarding. And, like, I was so close to leaving Thursday night. Mm-hmm. I was so close to just being like, screw this. I'll just finish it up in PA. And then, like, I was like, you know what?
You're here.
I'm here. Yeah, right. Yeah. Like, work is all good. Like, I can still hunt the morning. And the weather was looking better. And I was like, if I go home, like, it's one good weather day that I'm not going to hunt. So, right. Like, what am I going to do?
Right.
Go scout for a turkey that Jim didn't want to drive to anyway, you know?
That's awesome, so, man. I just like the fact that one, that it came together and, but like, that's a lesson in itself. Like you said, like you mentally were like, you know what? I'm done. I'm going to go home. And then you just flip that switch and you're there on a mission to do it and enjoy it. Right. Mm-hmm. And like you said, you get up there, the fog's rolling in, and you're like, oh man. But at the same time, it was just,
it's meant to be. I really do think it was. And I think about the missed opportunity and I beat myself. I'm extremely hard on myself.
Yeah.
But I beat myself up over that missed opportunity. Like the what ifs, the could haves,
right.
The should haves. And then you start thinking about everything that could have been happening because you know, I could have been home on Thursday and could have got all this stuff, you know, whatever it was. And then if I had to pick out of the two hunts though, I would take that second hunt, not just cause I killed the bird, but if just, I got to play the game.
Yeah.
And that's what I enjoyed most about doing this was like the Osceola, extremely quiet, very patient hunt. The Rio, while I would say patience added to it, very vocal hunt, a lot of gobbling, birds were around all day. My Merriam hunt was more spot and stalk,
yeah,
kind of thing, like figure out where they are, get in there, sneak in there and call them in to you. And then the Eastern was the classic, like off the roost, call them in. Yeah. So like it was four completely different
challenges.
Yeah. And I think like the Connecticut Eastern was before 7 o'clock. The Osceola was 10 o'clock. The Merriam was 11 o'clock and the Rio was at 4 p.m. You know, so like it was like a whole different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just like though that like you've become such a, you've been going on all these different adventure trips for how long now? Like 10 plus years.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like you found this system, you're able to embrace that, like the hardship, the suck part, sleeping in the vehicles, like, damn. All that stuff, like it's not glamorous.
It's not, and like I said, it's just me, so it doesn't have to be. Like I'm okay with it not being glamorous,
right,
especially
exactly.
Budget wise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because tags aren't super cheap. You know, right. Especially when you're hunting all over the place, and but I have like one of my systems. So I made I actually mixed elk and venison together,
mm-hmm.
and I made burgers. So I literally took, which I might even do this when I. If I ever did anything for maybe not backcountry, like big game, but like for turkey or something, I took a little cast iron and I took my my little stove
burner
and I just heated up the cast iron and I just flattened my burger and cooked my burgers. And I literally ate burgers for like 3 days off my tailgate. Like yep. Just whatever you could do to just get by for those couple days.
Yeah.
I fit a gym session in Connecticut too, just to, again, get a shower, go to the gym, mm-hmm. hang out. That's what's cool about turkey too, is like, you're not at it all day, every
right.
day.
Right. You know? Yeah. Like when you were even saying for being out West, like you had to work and then you went out like in that afternoon or whatever. And,
yeah.
Man, that's so cool.
Yeah. It was, I couldn't have closed that final chapter any better. If you would have asked me what my chances of shooting a bird up in Connecticut, I would have told you like 5%.
Yeah. It's funny because when you're thinking about you're getting five tags, you're like, man, it's probably loaded. And I said, that's like when we got Delaware, right? We got those Delaware tags and you get given like eight tags.
Yeah.
And you're like,
Where there's fawns.
We talked about that today on our hunt, and we said that it's most likely that they just can't get hunters, and they're trying to, you know,
entice
people to spend some money and go get out hunting. And the population is probably there. It's just maybe pockets.
Yeah. So that I was reading a little bit of backstory. I guess at one point it was always 5 tags for a while, but at one point it was 2 public, 3 private.
Okay.
But now it's 5 anywhere. Like, you can mix it up however you want.
Right.
But that was one thing. Like, I didn't see. I saw a couple trucks pulled off. I didn't actually run into any other hunters on any of the public that I was on. I didn't see anybody out of state. I was probably the only out of state person there.
You're the only crazy one.
Yeah. Like, but and I didn't hear a shot except for my shot. Like, for the 3 days that I, the 3 mornings that I hunted, I didn't hear a single shotgun.
It's wild.
Like, when we got all those tags in Delaware for deer hunting, like, we seen deer everywhere. It just wasn't in the state land like where we were.
Right.
Driving around the local farms and a lot of the private.
They were everywhere.
When we, you know, were spotting and stuff at, you know, on our way in, just with like headlights, it was like the fields lit up like a rock concert, you know?
Yeah.
And it's probably the same way there with turkeys. It's just very like pockety with private land, and you got to have the right spot.
It was just weird. Like, just dry, like, even after the second day, like I was still spending some time, like, after I finished up my work day, like, just driving around trying to find it. Just birds in general. I didn't see a single bird from the truck.
It's wild.
And I really only heard the encounter that I had when I heard those 2 toms on private. That was really the only, like, birds that I found. Aside from this guy obviously being roosted in that public area the next morning. But, yeah, they're really... I compared it a lot to, like, PA. Like, yeah. I mean, obviously the whole country is in a... At least this part of the country is in a decline in turkey population. Like, there's no hiding it.
Yeah. It's weird because here where we're sitting, we saw some sign, turkey sign and everything like that. And you would think the terrain, like, we crest that top. And I'm like, oh my God, if I was a turkey, this is exactly where I would be. And then you head a couple miles, hours, whatever, down south or west, and it's like they're everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's just strange.
Yeah, and that was the same thing up there. It was like, this is, when I was on the east side of the state, it was like, this is perfect habitat, like perfect turkey habitat. Why are they not in here?
Yeah.
And like, you couldn't make them be in there, so you had to leave. You know, and it was hard for me to not want to go back to where I screwed up that opportunity. Mm-hmm. It was hard for me not to go back there because I've learned in my years of hunting that you don't leave game to go find game.
Right.
You know, you usually end up on the losing end of that. But in this case, I felt I educated that one enough that it wasn't. Felt okay. Yeah, I felt like that spot was screwed up anyway.
Now, since this was close to home, did you take the tent with you?
No,
truck?
No, I didn't feel like putting it on, to be honest. And yeah. I was hoping to only be up there for a day or two.
Yeah.
So I just,
something.
I convert the back seat into a nice bed. Yeah. It's not glamorous, but
yeah,
it worked.
Yeah. Dude, hell of a slam.
Yeah. I appreciate it.
Guy's a turkey legend.
He's Turkey Tim. He's a magician.
Turkey Tim. Yeah, he is.
Magician.
Man, I just
I enjoyed just texting the group chat.
I give you a lot of credit for going through with it, just because we see it through social media, like where these guys go and they do it, but like for some that's their job.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they're working for companies, they're, you know, maybe a content creator where, you know, they're getting sponsorships and that's their income. So they have time. Right. Like, you still worked, you used your money, you went out there, you did it, you accomplished it, you used your woodsmanship, all that stuff. And knowing, like, we could, for the most part, hold our own and figure things out when it comes to the whitetail woods. But it's like, what do turkey like? Right. You know what I mean? Like, I just said, we get to the top. Why is it like, why did we not see anything? That'd be perfect. Like, turkey location for us. And
yeah,
what makes that a perfect turkey location? Like, to me, it was just like,
little bit. It was flat, right? You had a, they had a little bit of cover, but yeah, they also
like diversity.
They, you know what I mean. They, but also there was opening spots for him to strut, and like it was just everything came together.
It's pretty wild that he kind of like looked at places on the map and like put a pin there, and then went to it, and then it worked.
Yeah,
like yes. That like never happens, you know.
I feel like that just comes with like so much experience and failure, and being in the woods. And seeing like, oh, it looked like this on the map. Like I noticed with the mountain laurel, just based on the aerial, like when I'm crawling through this stuff, when your hat's getting knocked off your head and you're getting pissed off, I'm like, I'm never going to do this again. So what did this look like and how do I pull it out the next time so I can not go into something like that again?
Yeah.
Hell yeah, dude. No, I appreciate it.
What about one like for the traveling aspect of things, was it, what flying, was that?
Yeah, so flying isn't a huge deal, but I did get stopped with my meat this time.
Okay.
And I never have in the past, so that's a funny story, so I'm glad you brought that up. But so to fly with a firearm, it's very simple. It needs to be in a locked case, suitable to carry the firearm. It needs to be unloaded, obviously. I think you're allowed, unless they change this, but the last time I looked, you're allowed up to 11 pounds of ammunition, which is shotgun shells. That's a lot of that's a lot of ammunition. So when you go in, you go to the counter to check your bags, and you say, I need to declare a firearm, and they say okay, and they fill out a tag, and at that moment you unlock the case, you open up the case. They don't really confirm that it's unloaded. They verbally ask you, is the weapon unloaded, and then they throw the tag in the case. And I think that has something to do with the scanning machines that they have now. Back in the past, they would eventually ship the bag back and you would have to hang out. And some of the smaller airports are like this, that don't have, I guess, upgraded scanning equipment. So sometimes they'll come out and they'll ask for your key and then they'll go back, they'll open it.
They'll do it themselves.
And then they'll come back and they'll give you the key. And at that point, then you can proceed to security. Now, a lot of the technologies, they send it through the scanner. They don't actually come out and get the key, but you stay at the check-in desk until they clear it.
Okay.
And then they usually call the desk and they say, yeah, you know, this firearm's good to go. And then you could proceed to security. So, and it's like that, you know, both ways, obviously. It usually on the other side, then it comes out in bulk luggage.
Okay.
So, but smaller airports, sometimes it'll come out on the conveyor belt, just
like normal.
Just like normal. Yeah. So it all depends. So usually bigger airports, you're going to end up at a bulk area. Smaller airports, you're probably just going to end up on the carousel.
Gotcha.
Well, depends on the size of your case too, right? Because it could end up in like the XL section or whatever, like your golf club.
Yeah, like golf clubs, snowboard skis, like stuff like that. Like that all ends up, car seats or whatever.
Yeah.
So then coming back, what I've been doing is flying with the meat in your carry-on. So for this trip, for Florida, I only took my gun case and I took my personal item. I was able, because I was only down there for like 4 days. But when I went to Washington, Oregon, I was basically hunting the whole time and camping, I took a check bag, my firearm, and my personal item. So my personal item is like a little Kuyu bag, but I pretty much take a cooler bag, all the turkey meat I just had frozen. So I end up staying in Portland just to use a freezer and get my meat frozen, freeze it solid, go to the airport, and my bag gets pulled. And it never happened in Idaho. I did it. Florida, I did it. Never got pulled before. So the first thing the guy says is, wow, this bag's really cold. And, I put my hand up like, it's mine. And he comes over. He's like, oh, you have meat in here? And I'm like, yeah. He's like, what do you have, ducks? I'm like, no, turkey. And he goes, oh, I want to let you know there's a BB in one of your breasts. So he was actually able to pull the cooler out. And he said, yeah, it's in this bag right here. So I was like, hang on. I pulled out a pen and I marked the bag.
So you need to go pull it out later on?
Yeah. And go dig like... around and find the BB that was stuck in there. So if you ever want to see if there's BB stuck in anything, just send it through
TSA.
He actually showed me on the computer, too. He's like, you see that little dot right there? He's like, yeah, that's what triggered it. I'm like, that's incredible.
Yeah, that's all. That's
wild. It was pretty neat. Yeah, so there's a BB
stuck. So it's not as terrible as like what people might think. It could be the travel and all that stuff.
And the whole meat thing, I think a lot of people, like I flew from Idaho and I carried on a whole mule deer, deboned mule deer meat. You know, like you can get away. It's all got to be frozen. So like it all depends on how you package it or what you want to do with it. But right. you could essentially carry it on the plane or went through.
Like,
oh, no, carry it on.
Like your check-in.
No, carry on.
Really?
I don't think you can actually check it. No, I lied. You could check it, but you're going to pay for the bag. Sure. You know, because you're probably going to ship the whole cooler or something, you know. So I literally just make space, throw a cooler bag inside whatever backpack you're going to take. And so I fit a whole deer in a personal size. I use quotes because it was probably over the limit, but usually they don't whack it too.
You just sat with it. You didn't put it up
95
top.
Yeah, pounds underneath carry on.
Yeah, it was a lot. that's funny. So when I left Idaho that time and I had so much meat in the bag that I had no room for my laptop because I always take my work laptop with me. So I had a connection, and because I didn't want my laptop I couldn't fit it, and I didn't want it up against the ice, I put it underneath the seat in front of me, and the plane wasn't filled, so I put the meat above me, and I walked off the plane without my laptop.
Did you really?
And I had to like run back, and I was like, "Oh, I left my laptop," so I'll never do that again. But yeah, it's a very simple process as long as it's frozen.
Yeah,
you know, if it's frozen solid, they'll let you carry it on.
Heck yeah! Well, now we just got to get a.
What about the archery equipment? Same deal. You have to like declare. Is it like it's like a weapon?
That's a good question. I would imagine I may as well. So I used to when I hunted Nebraska, I used to hunt a couple days with the bow. And then shotgun would open up for turkey.
Mm-hmm.
So my bow case with that little pit that would hold all the arrows, I used to break my shotgun down and I used to put my shotgun in the pit, and then I'd put my bow over top and I'd fly with both of them. Mm-hmm. So I ended up still declaring it.
Yeah.
But I think it's probably safe to just be like, hey, I have a archery equipment here. I don't know if I need to declare this, but yeah,
makes sense.
Yeah. It's a pretty simple process though.
Hell yeah.
They deal with it so much. Like when I was leaving Florida, I almost missed my flight when I was leaving because the whole clearing the firearm took forever because there was four people in front of me that also had firearms.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know if people were just buying firearms and maybe there's no tax or something on it down there.
Florida, man, that's like a shoot first, ask questions later kind of state. Yeah,
or if that people were just Osceola hunting like crazy. I don't know.
Texas 2.0.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Now we just got to get PA birds down and...
Yeah, what's your plans now? Like, how much are you going to plan to hunt or...
Honestly, because you got Mother's Day weekend, and then another weekend we're coming for my brother's daughter's first birthday. Then we might do Knoebels that Sunday. So we might be here.
Yeah, then we have Total Archery Challenge.
Then we've got Total Archery Challenge.
Yeah, it's at the... End of the season. Yeah,
the 22nd is the 3D shoot for ASA. So
we get out before work at all, or is that?
I'll probably do that.
Yeah.
Tell her.
How about you, Josh?
I work that weird schedule.
So oh yeah, you have days off.
My days off are in the middle of the week. This week I'm actually 3 to 11, so I'll be able to hunt Monday through Saturday.
All right, Josh will just shoot all the birds.
I'm taking my buddy out on Tuesday, and he's got a pretty awesome spot. He's never killed a bird, so that's always fun to me. We talked about that earlier.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I've been fortunate enough to kill a lot of turkeys.
Just be a better guide than I was today Jim.
I was a terrible guide for Jeremy.
No.
I don't think I can call very good or something, but yeah, just being a part of the experience is awesome. You take a new hunter, like... I know this guy, I've known him my whole entire life. He works with me. He's one of our guys. And I know for a fact we got him into archery this year, and he kind of went head over heels, bought himself a brand new Matthews. We sold one Ultra Arrows. And I know for a fact as soon as he hears this first turkey gobble in the woods, he's going to be like buying a Benelli shotgun. And he'll have some tethered
M2 vest.
M2 turkey vest. Yeah. And he'll go off the deep end, but, you know, it's a blast to see new turkey hunters, like, their face when that bird's gobbling and coming in. So
it's just
a ton of fun.
Yeah, there's just, like, because even, like, today, even though it was, like, slow and quiet, like, for us, it was a matter of, it was beautiful out, we're hanging out with each other. I don't know, there's just something about, like, the fall is beautiful because of the colors and of the leaves and just the way the foliage is, and it's deer hunting, right? But, like, turkey has its own...
It's like watching everything come to life.
Everything comes to life, right? Like, even like, we didn't hear a gobble, but hearing the birds chirping, mm-hmm. and just the woods come alive, and just the greenery, I don't know, the sun, it's just the smells, it's just, it's in its own category, and I just love it.
I think deer hunting, too, is a little bit different, because everything's always quiet. You expect a deer to come in quiet, so when you see one, it's like, oh,
yeah,
you spot a deer. But when a turkey... You know, you're walking down that trail and boom, a bird fires up at 100 yards. It's like, it almost rattles your cage and it becomes game on. It's such an awesome experience.
It is, because it's unique, because the only time we hear a deer coming in is if, like say, vocally, is if a buck's grunting and we're like, holy shit, we got to, like, hopefully that deer plays the game of not going haywire and just zipping through. You know what I mean? So it's difficult, where if a turkey calls in and answers you back, you're playing a game.
Yeah.
Like, that's fun.
I think that's why I like the run and gun so much, because it's complete opposite. Like, the most, you know, deer, you're either in a tree or you're posted nine out of 10 times, you know, unless you're doing some type of drive or something.
But, right.
But with turkey, you're just constantly moving. Like, Jim, you and I probably did 3 miles this morning.
Probably, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did. I mean, we did the same. I think it's a mile to walking that trail all the way to the top and stop and call. We didn't sit down once, but you know,
no.
You're constantly getting the different spots, and before you call, you're looking around, you're like, okay, if a bird gobbles right now, we're sitting down right here, right there. You know what I mean? It's a chess match, just waiting for the bomb to drop.
That's one of the biggest things I learned in my failures and mistakes was, if I'm going to call, I need to know what my setup is before I even call.
Yeah.
Because I remember one time in Maryland, I called and I was like at the top of this mountain and it was all saplings and everything, like nothing to sit up against. And this bird hammers like within like 60 yards, like over the edge of the mountain. And I'm just like standing there looking, spinning in circles, like where the heck could I set up? And by the time I did that, the bird crested the hill full fan. And I'm just standing there like 30 yards with the gun on my shoulder looking at him. And he just boop right down again. I'm like, I will never do that again.
I did the same thing. It was last year with like multi-floor rows. Bird hammered and like he was coming. I like nowhere to sit down. I sit down like in like a sticker bush. You go to lean back. There's nothing to lean against. You got things hanging, sticking to you. I'm like, this was a bad idea.
You need a 100-year-old redwood to sit up against.
Oh, yeah. I'm like a stump in the woods. Jeremy can just lean up against my leg. He'll just stand there with my arms out sideways. Don't mind me.
Jeremy hangs on to Josh with his saddle.
Good shit. Nah, that's awesome, man. Well, we'll have to figure something out and try to get together again.
Plenty of season left.
Yeah, plenty. We could go down to the farm.
There's birds there. You just got to bring your stick and string.
Mm-hmm.
If I go out turkey hunting again and on my own, it's going to be in secret. I'm not going to tell you guys about it.
Jim doesn't agree with waking up this early for feathered animals.
Yeah, although that thing was delicious last night, so like it definitely piqued my interest.
So
again.
Good.
Yeah, those nuggets were so awesome. Good. Yeah.
Some nuggies. All right, man. Well, appreciate you, Tim, telling the story of the slam, man.
I'm glad we were all able to talk about it. It was good.
Maybe one of you will, one of us could join you next time and do something.
Hopefully Realtree calls you and like Michael Waddell will fight you out, because you're doing some shit that is worthy of hunting with some of them guys, I think.
Give a shout out to Cluck Calls and Primo.
Yeah, who's your you thank your sponsors? Yeah.
Jeremy's my sponsor.
Jeremy's your sponsor.
Antler up.
Antler up.
Antler up. Oh man.
Beard down.
We'll get there.
Midna. before we hang up, I just want to put out that we're accepting Venmo. If anybody wants to help pay for the renovations at our deer camp, that if anybody wants to donate, it's in shambles and we could use some help. We appreciate it.
It's shambles. As we're sitting on a couch.
It gives you the true cabin aspect. You walk around the kitchen with your shoes on.
2,500 square foot shamble.
How many? There's hundreds of thousands of these broads taking pictures of their feet and putting it online and asking for, and putting their Venmo, you know, information out. And people are sending
buy me
money.
A drink.
You know, we're just asking for a little bit of like tile flooring and, you know, maybe a cabinet.
You can make a video. Just go out in the parking lot and scream, give me some water.
It's true.
I need water. 2.9 mil.
Just for saying I need water.
Oh, my God. On that note, thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next week. Ant, we're up. He's got that.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Antler Up Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. Please go check us out on our Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, and at antlerupoutdoors.com. If you enjoyed this episode, go leave a review and subscribe for next week's episode. Until then, Antler Up.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.